Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And on our way to this conversation, we'll introduce you to our first guests here in this first part of our program. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We're joined here. We're looking at the question of black men in our society. We're also going to launch off into the end of Pride Month here at the end of this conversation today, looking at how that fits into that question, also where we've come since marriage equality happened and between that and Orlando and what that says about the state of the LGBTQ community. But first, we're going to talk with Charles Bethea back in the studio. He's director of collections and exhibitions at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture in Baltimore, and talk about the Question Bridge Black Males, a special exhibit that's running through September 30th. And Charles, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me out.
And y'all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can email us, talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner. But do call in. Maybe you've seen the exhibit and you have thoughts about where this exhibit is and what it said to you, 410-319-8888. But for those uneducated in the exhibit, including myself, other than what I've seen online, tell us about it.
Well, Question Bridge is a very interesting exhibition. It's been traveling for a number of years, but this is the first time it's been here in Maryland, and definitely the first time at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. The exhibit itself examines a lot of the questions that African-American males have among themselves. What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a black man in America? What does it mean to be a gay or homosexuality within the overall context of the black community? As well as other whimsical questions such as, you know, what does it mean or how should I feel if I'm eating watermelon and chicken in front of other people who aren't persons of color?
If that's not so whimsical, there are a lot of folks who say, no, I'm never doing that in front of white people.
That is true. It is a very interesting and curious conversation.
Just a digression. I was reading this whole article, interesting article on watermelon in the South and how that was turned into this racist gnome in America, but actually began as the way that formerly enslaved African people in this country made money by raising watermelons in their fields and sold them to white people for the most part.
Yes.
And then they turned that into a whole racist trope.
Exactly.
Against black folks.
That's exactly how that actually unfolded.
Just thought I'd throw that out there since you said that.
Well, those are the type of things that you're going to learn about in this exhibition, to be honest. There are just a number of questions that, you know, people just want to know. And the very interesting piece about this exhibition is there are questions that, you know, often we as black men ask among ourselves to ourselves, and often not to other black males in a larger context. And this particular exhibition, pulls the curtain back a bit and allows people to engage themselves into this conversation. What we've learned, even in our own presentation of it, as well as this exhibition has traveled throughout the country, it's about a 3.5-hour video presentation. And it really wasn't designed for people to sit through the entire thing. But the questions and the interactivity in it are so powerful and so engaging. People have set through
the entire
installation
thing.
Yes.
Without popcorn. but this is the film I think is important throughout here also. I'm going to talk about what's at the heart of some of this. I've watched not all 3.5 hours, but online I've watched a bunch of it. And Jesse Williams, who gave that very incredible, impassioned speech at the NAACP Image Awards. BET Awards, excuse me. Was executive producer on this project, right? He's one of the people who put this
one
out.
One of them, yes. Right? Yes, and he himself is actually portrayed and is a featured person within the exhibition. I think a lot of what he said a few days ago has registered with a lot of folks. And the one thing I do like about this exhibition, and I like as to the other things that we do at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum is the fact that we're talking about history and putting things into context that make it relevant to today. Everything that he said on stage, everything that's been going on with Black Lives Matter, with the youth being charged in this country to get out on the front lines is not new. Unfortunately, we are still arguing about some of the same things we've been talking about in this country for the last 50 years, the last 60 years, the last 150 years, and various groups throughout our history have been doing so. And now it's a new group or a new generation arguing for a lot of the same things.
One of the pieces I saw this morning again and in this media exhibit, Question Bridge Black Males, was the question a young kid asked about what is – when am I a man, and what is a man? How do I know?
Right.
And had these kind of string of answers from all kinds of other men, all kinds of men, I should say. Had very different ideas, and then other images of young people popping up. I thought it was a pretty powerful piece, and that really struck me.
Well, it is. One, first of all, the young person that's in that that's asking that question is the most adorable young man that you could possibly see. And to ask a question that is so innocent but yet so powerful to say, how do I know when I become a man? And how you can answer that question, particularly in this day and age of being a black man. I mean, just a man alone, but then also being an African-American person in America. There are some very interesting responses that he has. And I'm not going to give any of them away because I want folks to come down and see the exhibition.
But you've watched all 3.5 hours, I'm sure, as curator, right?
Several times, yes.
So talk about some of the moments in here that you consider kind of very powerful or unusual or unexpected that are in this exhibit.
Well, you know, one of the things, there are a couple of things that come to mind, but one, there's a gentleman that is talking about something that he personally witnessed about an incident that happened with a young lady who was being accosted, and he was amazed at the amount of people who were witnessing this and doing nothing to come to her aid. And he witnessed this as a young person and vowed to himself, as being a man, as being a positive person and a citizen, he would never allow anything like that to happen again during his watch, during his lifetime. And the discussions of that as to how we should interact and relate with one another. There were also questions and conversations about, for example, homosexuality within the black community, and what does it mean and how you should feel and how you are seen and portrayed, dealing with, you know, your question of sexuality or embracing who you are and what that actually means. So those are some of the things that really stick out in this exhibition.
Yeah, that particular piece, I watched some of that part as well. I thought was really very powerful, just in terms of what they did in producing this to say, let's wrestle with this question in an honest way, because it's been... You know, when marriage equality came up in Maryland, there was this huge battle, especially in the church, over this question.
Sure.
And you had people like Leah Gilmore, who were for an organization of straight black men and women families, saying we support marriage equality and the Maryland Black Family Alliance that they created. So it really kind of showed the schism in the world and our perspective on sexuality. And I thought they kind of handled it in a kind of very... I was going to say nuance, not so much, because they hit it straight on, but in a very kind of powerful way.
It is definitely straightforward. They're not shying away from anything. A lot of the responses are real. And you have this approach to deal with these particular questions, deal with these subject matters in a way that, again, you pull back the veil, you pull back, you expose people for what they're really thinking and how they're feeling about certain things, that being one of them. So that's what makes this exhibition so wonderful.
For you, what's the importance of this now? I mean, why this now, and what do you think it says now? Why is this a critical piece for people to...
One thing is because at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum, we've dubbed 2016 as the Year of the Black Male. And all of the exhibitions, programs, events, and so forth within the year of 2016 have been around the issues of African-American men, past, present, and future. And this particular exhibition is just one more step into delving into the history and what a future looks like for African-American males. And I think that the museum is the place to have that level of discourse.
And what kind of discourse are you having around this?
Oh, we've put together a number of programs that relate to the history and future of African-American males in the country. Some as questions that deal with African-American violence, black-on-black violence, as it's known, as well as how to, you know, create your own businesses and, you know, work with others in the community, relating from whether or not if it's drug programs or educational programs and so forth, that's dealing with your, you know, advancement and so forth within society. There have been a number of programs that we put together around specifically targeting African-American men.
So one thing I may ask you before we roll and kind of take this conversation into African-American men and this Pride Month and men and women and what all that means and mm-hmm. where we've come to is things you have on, the stuff you've taken out of the vault, which I did not have a chance to see yesterday, but I'm looking forward to coming down mm-hmm, mm-hmm. seeing them all and doing a story on this. So talk about what you unearthed.
There's a new exhibition that's actually opening up today. It's my first exhibition that I curated since joining the museum in October of last year, and it's entitled Now That's Cool. Thank you.
Now That's Cool.
That's what it's called. And one of the reasons behind that is, you know, having been a person that's grown up in museums at an early age, I've always been in awe of the power of objects and artifacts in museums. Yeah. And, you know, as I've been telling people thus far, I challenge anyone to come to this exhibition and not find something in the exhibit that they don't find to be cool. But some of the pieces that someone would see, we have brought in two original photographs of Frederick Douglass, one actually autographed by Frederick Douglass himself, of course, being a Marylander.
There is no smiling Frederick Douglass anywhere.
Yeah, right? not as much.
He was not going to smile. He said, I do not smile for the camera.
But, you know, the interesting thing about Douglass is the fact that during the 19th century, he was the most photographed person, black or white, in the country. And even in that context, with the labeling in the exhibit, you know, I posed the question, well, since he enjoyed photography as a mean of art and its technological advances as it's changed throughout even his lifetime, how would he have fared in this day and age with the advent of, you know, celebrity paparazzi and, you know, the selfies and so forth? So it's an interesting dynamic.
We could do a little Afrofuturist thing on that.
Oh, you know what? I'm glad that you mentioned that. I mean, as an added plug, I mentioned that 2016 was the year of the black man. Well, 2017 is the year of the black woman. But 2019 is going to be the year of Afrofuturism. So, yeah, we are going to get into some things. I'm trying to do some really interesting things.
Because 2019, you juxtapose that 2019 Afrofuturism with the fact that that's also the year in August when the first Africans were brought to what is now the United States.
Absolutely.
That's an interesting juxtaposition.
There's a method to my madness.
Is there? I know there is. That I don't doubt, Charles. That I don't doubt at all. So this exhibit also has all kinds of some of the pieces I saw these online. Mm-hmm. The documents from Baltimore for slave auctions and more. You have all this stuff
yes.
there as well, right?
Yes, yes. Very interesting things. There are a couple of things just to highlight very quickly. One, there is a document that I brought in that is asking for $15,000 of insurance to cover a slave trip, a voyage to Africa to bring enslaved persons back.
Whoa.
And the insurance request is to a Baltimore firm, hence as to how it made it into our collection as it's tied to Maryland. So there are some interesting things. And I didn't mention that the letter for the request for insurance is well after the 1807 ban of transatlantic slave trade. Those things were still going on. Yeah.
Ensure my illegal
exactly,
trade.
Exactly.
Because by that time, it was the internal trade that took place
right.
between Baltimore and New Orleans.
Correct. Baltimore didn't get engaged as much in the transatlantic slave trade, but they were at the top
Deep.
Of the pile as far as the domestic slave trade was concerned.
So, and how long is this exhibit up?
This exhibit is up through the end of the year. So you have time to come out and see it throughout the summer months and fall.
Well, what we're going to do is I know we're going to come down and spend a good deal of time together in the museum walking through the exhibit.
Sure. Look forward to it.
And feeling that out and talking about that. And this exhibit we've been talking about the black male runs through.
Question Bridge runs through September
30th.
30th,
right? Mm-hmm. And so when we will see Question Bridge, so we have the 3.5-hour video. What else is happening?
Well, there are other things that are actually interactive within the exhibit, low-tech interactivity. There are a few walls that where else can you go in a museum to take a piece of chalk and write on the wall to respond to a query that we ask? Two simple ones. What does it mean to be a black man in America? And, you know, since the exhibition opened, there have been a number of responses that we've been recording throughout this dynamic as to what people think that actually means to be a black man in America. And there's another interactivity that the show has put together, because there's some iPad tablets that people can record other questions for future visitors as the show continues to travel.
So they're both really good exhibits. I think that and what I've seen so far of the video, I was really kind of very taken by it and thought that I really can't wait to see the whole thing and see how this unfolds.
Definitely. Something to check out.
Charles Bethea is the Director of Collections and Exhibitions at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture here in Baltimore. We've been talking about the Question Bridge, Black Males, this exhibition running through September 30th. The museum is over at 830 East Pratt Street in Baltimore, and you can get information at lewismuseum.org. We'll also have it linked on our webpage at steinershow.org. And what are the hours of the museum?
We open from 10 to 5 Wednesday through Sunday. No, 12 to 5 on Sunday.
Gotcha. 12 to 5 on Sunday. So, folks, check this out. It really is. I mean, it was put together by some really creative people from around the country, and it's very thought-provoking. And this other new exhibit is one that I am looking forward to seeing that Charles Bethea unearthed in the vault at Reginald F. Lewis and see what gems are hiding in there. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a very short break and come right back to have a conversation coming out of this, which part of that exhibit was about black gay men in our society and trans men in our society. This is the end of Pride Month. And so we're going to look at from the marriage equality issue that kicked off here in this state to what happened in Orlando, everything in between, and what the state is today. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
And here we are. So many of us seeing it time and time again. We're like, here we are again. On Sunday morning, a lone gunman armed with an AR-15 assault rifle and a handgun killed 49 people, injured 50 more, because they were dancing and loving at the pulse. A lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer club in Orlando, Florida. Like so many other victims of hatred and bigotry, they were revelers. They were out for a night of fun, and they were massacred for who they are by a man who apparently was driven to insanity and anger and hatred at the images of two men kissing. My sympathies and prayers go out to the families and friends and loved ones of those injured and lost in this tragedy. This massacre is a stark reminder that none of us is safe when hate has its finger on the trigger. Each day, children, women, men are shot down one by one in groups, in the streets, in our cities, in our towns, along country roads, while stopped at a streetlight, at work, at a classroom, or in homes by guns of angry and lost people. Every day, we destroy each other in ways and for reasons that defy our very humanity that brings so much meaning and compassion to our world. Many of the victims of the violence that plagues our land are targeted because of their sex, because of their race, because of their immigrant status, their age, their disability, or some other aspect of who they are. In Orlando, thank you. I wanted to make sure you saw the words. This attack reminds us that while
welcome back. What you're hearing was the voice of Delegate Mary Washington, and when she was speaking at the vigil for the victims of Orlando. The vigil was taking place here in Baltimore. And she was going to join us today but could not because she was on the road, and we wanted her to stay safe on the road and not try to talk and drive at the same time. Since both things are intense. But we are joined here by a number of people as we kind of look at this moment we are in. This is the end of Pride Month, and it's an appropriate time to kind of take off from the Black Male Project we were talking about earlier to this particular subject, and just think about where we've come. And I was thinking about all the people that I interviewed here on this program leading up to the marriage equality vote in the state legislature, and the intense discussions we had. We had a roundtable here of men, black ministers, who were talking about their views on marriage equality, and that was a really powerfully intense discussion. And then we interviewed a lot of families and people who want to be able to be married. My interest now of them is to kind of bring them on to see how life has changed and made difference since they were allowed to be married and did marry, and what has changed. And then you have that, and we come all the way up to where we are with Orlando now, and we have situations in Baltimore and around the country where trans people who are killed in the streets of the city. That's a very real issue. What happens to so many of the young gay, lesbian, and trans people in our community who are homeless teenagers, and why that exists in proportions that we don't realize how large that is. But also the power that Baltimore has. Baltimore has a place, oddly enough, many people don't realize this, but Baltimore is a city that has one of the largest percentages per capita of gay and lesbian married couples of any place in the United States of America. And it is also one of the cities that has one of the most active and forceful presence of gay and lesbian community than the most cities in the country. So it's a really kind of mixed bag, but a powerful one to talk about. Breonna Jenkins joins us once again, Executive Director of the Baltimore Trans Alliance. Carlton Smith should be here in a few minutes. He's Executive Director and one of the founders of Baltimore Black Pride and the Center for Black Equity in Baltimore. Michelle Antoinette, love the poet, spoken word artist and musician, founder of Brown and Healthy, promoting mental, physical, and spiritual growth and wellness for people of color, and co-host of Booth Stories, which is featured here monthly on The Mark Steiner Show, is in studio. Welcome to have you all here.
Good to be here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write us an email to talk@steinershow.org. You can also log on to our Facebook pages, tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do call in 410-319-8888. So, I mean, talking a bit about what stuff I just raised here, I mean, it is a really mixed bag, Michelle, just about where we are and where we've come to. What are your thoughts?
Well, I know that I have a lot of input on what happened surrounding the Orlando piece. So I don't know if we want to jump right into that.
Go ahead. Whatever you'd like to pick up.
I think that, you know, number one, I will definitely say that initially I'm not surprised by the violence. I don't know if that makes me strange, but, you know, I'm very desensitized by what has been occurring in our country for, I don't know, last 2 or 3 years, just as far as violence goes. And I think that what got me really was the responses to the deaths of the 49 people and the 53 injured. I was very appalled by, you know, the Baptist preacher who said that Orlando was a safer place.
Right. I saw that.
You know, these perverts are dead, and referred to them as pedophiles. And I think that people have a very skewed view of what taking a life means, and what, you know, and doing so with people who just want to love who they want to love, you know, and the people who applaud that, you know, I feel like if you're going to lean on the Bible for your justifications, you need to understand what that does for you and where your soul salvation may end up if that's what you believe in. You know what I'm saying? I actually wrote a poem about it because I was so disgusted. You know, when I was about 14 years ago, when I was in college, someone threatened my life and my friend's life because a young lady that was with us did not want to talk to him. He didn't go to our school. He popped his trunk, told us he was going to pop his trunk, and he popped his trunk and came after us.
Because you were two women together?
Well, it was five of us. It was a group of women, and my friend's girlfriend was like hanging. You know how when you're with your friends, they hang around your neck? She was hanging around my neck, and he was so mad that she didn't want to talk to him that he came after us. You know, half of us ran across the yard. Me and my friend ran to the car, and we couldn't raise our heads up. Like, I had to literally remember the parking lot laying back because he was walking through the aisles of the parking lot looking for us, you know, and this brought all of this negativity. And, you know, I've walked down the streets down the Inner Harbor and been called something by passerbys on bikes, you know, just because of the way I was dressed, you know. And I think that it's so ridiculous that people, and then just want to justify, well, he was gay too. Well, self-hate is real. And it's perpetuated by...
You're talking about now, you're back to Orlando now.
Yeah,
about
I was, back to Orlando, you know, saying, well, he was gay too. And I think, you know, there's such thing as self-hate, and it's perpetuated by a society who can't understand that nobody is hurting anybody by being who they are, you know? And some people do not like it that other people are more free than them.
And not to get stuck on this point, but what you just said about the person who committed those murders in Orlando, 49 people shot and 53 people wounded, is that there are a lot of reports that he, as a Muslim, mm-hmm. was terrified of his own sexuality,
right.
hiding his own sexuality, mm-hmm. and that what part that may have played in mm-hmm. his eruption mm-hmm. to kill
mm-hmm. People who are a little more free than he, or who have a right. little more, you know, capabilities of being who they are. And you know, that is very real. Like, I tell people, like, you know, these things, these scenarios you see on, like, CSI and these other shows, they're not making this up. It's not this violence and this self-hate, suicides, these killings, they're not making this up, the way that people treat people. And I was like, and if he was gay, he might have been the type of person that would allow someone to do him a sexual favor in an alley and then kill that person. That happens too. You know, but we have to take blame. We have to, you know, put the blame where it rests with the people who are running churches, people who are heads of state, people who are setting these examples, and they are not the music industry. You know, there are a lot of gay people in the music industry, in the media, in Hollywood, and they perpetuate homophobia. They perpetuate it because they don't want to get called out, or they don't want to lose their money, or whatever it is. But the minute that they start, like rappers, the minute they start talking about what is really going on, or just saying, hey, this is who I am, the minute things will really start to change. But people are so afraid, you know.
Brianna, you want to jump in on this at all?
Yeah, sure. Well, I feel like we talked in my DM about the whole Orlando thing, and to me, just reliving the trauma mm-hmm. of that whole experience is really too much, especially as a trans person. But first, I want to just the response from the community.
Brianna, let me just jump in. I apologize. I didn't realize we were at the break point. Let me take a quick break here, and we'll come right back. All right. I didn't realize it was already 31. So we'll take a short break and come right back and continue our conversation with our guest. You join us here at 410-319-8888. Folks, this is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. Let me get back to our conversation, but on our way there, let me say very quickly, I want to remind you about an upcoming event, Baltimore, The Rise of Charm City, WEAA's innovative new audio documentary series, produced in partnership with the Association of Independent Radio, AIR, is wrapping up its inaugural 12-episode season. Incredible work these women have done. Just amazing. To celebrate, WEAA and show creator Stacia Brown and all the other women bringing you this incredible project, invite you to an elegant evening of live storytelling that honors the history of some of Baltimore City's most beloved businesses and neighborhoods. The event's taking place on Thursday, July the 14th, from 6 to 9 p.m., at the Frederick Douglass Isaac Myers Maritime Museum. Dessert and wine reception will be there. Tickets and more information can be found on Facebook at Baltimore, The Rise of Charm City. So be there. It's going to be great. And celebrate and meet the women behind this incredible series. We're here with Michelle Antoinette, Brianna Jenkins, and join us here at 410-319-8888. I'm sorry, Brianna, you were on the verge of saying something when I had to go to break. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I'm back. Okay. So I really don't want to focus or rehash the trauma of Orlando because it was very traumatic. And I know me and other community members are still processing this real trauma that's present in our everyday lives. But I just want people just to be mindful and just to be aware that we already knew that this type of homophobia, transphobia, this, and I know there are a lot of people that are listening to the show that are trying to figure out how to get into activism, that are trying to figure out how to do something impactful as a result of the tragedy. And just what I have to say is that we as community members, we as allies, we have the responsibility to make these people that are trying to appropriate the situation for gun control or anything else, we have a responsibility to make them tell the truth about the situation, because it's something that still annoys me is that we still have people in positions of power, whether they be politicians or religious leaders, who are citing this as a failure of gun control, when really this was an attack of queer people of color, something that is prominent and prevalent, and it just blows my mind how people, because of their prejudice or because of their privilege, they're just unable to address what this really is. I mean, even on the BET Award, we couldn't address the queer people of color, the queer black, the queer Latin people whose lives were taken because of the act of hate. So it's our responsibility to make sure that they say what this really is and not allow this to be appropriated or be a smoke screen to further other people's agendas from the next come in the situation.
We're also now joined by Carlton Smith, who is executive director and one of the founders of the Baltimore Black Pride and the Center for Black Equity in Baltimore. And Carlton, welcome. Good to have you back with us as well. Carlton, you there?
Thank you, Mark.
Good, I'm here. Just making sure you're there. So one of the things I want to ask, and let's explore this a bit, is this strange juxtaposition, it seems to me, between a place like Maryland in Baltimore, where there's always been a very strong gay and lesbian community, and now the world has moved ahead with LGBTQ communities in our city. As I said earlier, one of the highest percentages of gay and lesbian marriages in the country, especially in the black community and anywhere in the country. Yet you have all the kind of homophobia that earlier in the program, before you got here, that Michelle was kind of really delving into. And so all the issues around the gay pride parade and the splits even inside the gay pride community around black and white, that's real too. Mm-hmm. So, Carl, give us your overview of that as we approach the end of this month.
So, Mark, I wanted to say that I know the Center of Black Equity, which formerly known as Baltimore Black Pride, has been a par member of helping marriage equality move forward. And with that, there has been what I call some fallout from the religious right, who feels that they have the right to attack us by hate and by sharing and filtrating that into the media. As you have mentioned, there have been individuals or religious groups who don't want to see us progress. We are a family, the LGBTQ community. And even though we may agree to disagree on some things, we are still a family first. And it is our love that moves us forward, because we know what it is to be discriminated. We know what it is to be rejected. And what we want to do is stand up for right. We want to stand up for love, and we know that love wins. And in that, we must be the messengers of that. And we must put preachers and all those who stand against us, we must stand up for our community and tell the truth and be authentic and be real wherever we go out. Because we're looked upon to be that messenger for our young people who are galvanizing and need to see leadership and need to see visibility.
So, but again, coming back to what Carlton was just saying, Michelle, I mean, we're at this very strange juncture, it seems to me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Where, on a number of levels, I mean, we talk about it all the time in terms of this really strange juncture we are in America around race. which is the contradictions are really bubbling up to the surface in ways they have not done for decades.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there's more power in America from and within the black community than there ever has been before.
Mm-hmm.
These are contradictions. They both exist side by side, right, and they interact.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing I think is true in the gay and lesbian world, the queer world, mm-hmm. that there's this opening now in a way that never has been before.
Right.
But it's also unearthed this reaction to the ability of gay, lesbian, trans, and queer people to stand up and say, I'm a human being, I'm here.
Right.
And this is my life. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
right.
This is.
And I think that we, you know, just to kind of address what Brianna was saying about not appropriating it for your own cause, I think that it's kind of dangerous to walk a line where we start splitting hairs like that. I think that, you know.
Hairs
that,
like what?
Well, what we don't, in my opinion, I don't think that we should say, well, this is solely an issue. It is an issue about queer people of color dying in a mass number, unprecedented number of murders happened that day, you know. And I think that it is definitely a gun issue. I think that needs to be addressed. This man was allowed to get an assault weapon, and he's on the FBI, you know, list. Like, we need to address that. We need to also address the fact that another man was stopped going to a pride in California shortly after that with automatic weapons in his car.
Well, I didn't read about that.
And you didn't read about that.
No.
And clips, several magazine clips taped together saying he was on his way to Pride. That happened in the same day. I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist, so I don't think that was a coincidence. But I think that all of it goes hand in hand. I get that people shouldn't just solely focus on that, you know, and people are using that to kind of mask not addressing the fact of who died and what, you know, what happened. But I think that it's all an issue. And because why is that even possible? And if that's possible, what else is going to happen because of that? You know what I mean? I think that people are coming for queer people all over, queer, transgendered, you know, and we have to, like you said, we're standing up now and we're saying, no, we're human. And no, you cannot take our lives, you know. And yes, we have the right to, you know, in Baltimore where the billboards used to read, married people make more money. Marriage works. That used to be on the billboards that I would read in this city. And that is because marriage in its infancy was a business arrangement, and romance and marriage did not go together, and churches did not want to get involved in it. So because it has morphed over centuries to whatever people think is traditional marriage now, you know, oh, it's just because it's supposed to be a man. No, it's because you get tax credits and breaks and this and that. It's your civil liberties. It's your civil rights. But you're denying that of us, as if getting cast out of our homes and being treated like lepers isn't enough. You know what I mean? So, you know.
And so people are still being cast out of their homes and treated by as lepers.
Absolutely. I have people who are 40 years. I have people who are 40 years old plus talking to me like days after the incident about how they wish they could come out to their families in 2016.
What were you about to say, Carlton?
Yes, I've had same conversations with individuals, and even some of our LGBT elders still are not comfortably out, in a sense, because even now, many of them in their senior age are, if they ever had to go to a healthcare facility and are being looked after, they don't want to talk about their status as an LGBT person because they know they will be cast out or some harm may come to them. So they go back into the closet. And that's an unfortunate thing for many of them who have been our libraries, our legacies, and moving our movement forward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious where you all think we go now. You know, I mean, so we talked. I talked earlier about my theory about being at this strange crossroad in American culture, but an important one. And you know, yes, we have open gay and open lesbian folks who've been elected to the city to offices throughout the state of Maryland. You know, that's all real. Mm-hmm. But where do we, what do you think has to happen? Where do you think we have to go? What do you think are the next moves in terms of building a society that, that really believes in human rights, that is really where real equality exists, and what struggles lay ahead of us?
Hmm.
Let me jump in on this.
Go right ahead.
I think we have to acknowledge what the fight for same-sex marriage, or who that fight left out. And all too often, once again, here we go, it was queer people of color. Marriage equality has not stopped homelessness, unemployment, violence, contracting STDs and STIs. And I think even a year later, people think that the passage of same-sex marriage, that was the end-all, be-all. But that fight actually left a lot of people of color behind. So what I'm doing, and what I know other trans leaders across the countries are doing, is that we're actually engaging in work, whether that be creating our own organizations locally, like the Baltimore Trans Alliance Pair, or we're doing policy work, or we're actually engaging with politicians, people that are running for office, to make sure that whatever they're doing, that it centers those people that are most marginalized. In the Trans Alliance case, trans women of color. So it's moving forward, making sure that the most marginalized are included in this conversation. And to go back to what you're saying, how Maryland is such a progressive state, and there are so many of these type of people here. So why is it that the lived experience just doesn't match the promise or the vision of what this is supposed to look like? You really have to look about who is in power and who has access to the power. And a lot of times that those are not LGBT people of color, yet we are the ones that are systemically impacted by these things. So I think it's worth it not only to say that, oh, these people are here and some of these people can have power, but let's look at those dynamics to keep those other people always out of that power and always out of that sphere of having access. And what are some realistic and intentional things that we can do to remove those obstacles and to counteract that? But definitely the Baltimore Trans Alliance is doing a lot of stuff on the ground to make the promise and the reality congruent with one another.
So, Mark, I would like to jump in and say that we as a community must take over the narrative. We must say this is where we like to see ourselves in the picture of moving forward, of equality for all. We are all human beings. We are all God's children. Mm-hmm. So therefore, when we all sit at the table, everyone should be fed. But until we come collectively and sit at the tables where we are making the policy or in being included, we're going to have to take charge of that narrative and make that change. And Gandhi said it better. Create the change you want to see in the world. And that's where we all, I can just speak on some of the things that Brianna has spoken about. I've seen it on for myself, but I even now see with the rates of HIV going up and young black gay men, unless they're sitting at the table mm-hmm. and are being a part, and as well as trans men and women are sitting at the table, they are excluded out of those conversations, and they need to be there. It's one thing to be an ally, but it's another thing to have all of them have their collective voices raised up and bring it to everyone's attention.
Okay. And Michelle, we have about a minute left in the segment. You take us to that break.
Okay. Changing the narrative. As an artist, a performance artist, it's important to write about these things and to talk about them. So I wrote a poem addressing what's going on. So here we go. So I write for the 49, a straight line to solidarity. Stand straight for twisted mindsets to seek to decipher a distortion in my sexuality. I've been this way. Let you tell it I should die today. 49 names for 50 states. Each one should claim a piece of that pie today and have a toast to the good life. State law makes this all right. Federal gun control remains mythical, and the angels weep because God was right. We are a wretched people who can't hear the call or know that God is love and live within the fall of each one of his children, trapped and corralled to the end of their adult. To the recap of their childhood, right there is where their mama stood weeping for their baby's back. A hate crime meets terror attack in the blink of an eye. Someone's child died and people applaud that. Terrorism defined is inflicting fear in the hearts of people whether an attack happens or not. How many now will not get caught dead in a gay club or being celebratory at Pride? I'd be lying if I say I didn't feel like I'd die when it's time to celebrate in my city. Crazy people scare me, and with just cause. The laws don't protect me, so I pause and consider my next steps carefully. Why be a martyr if humanity won't so much as shed a tear for me? 49 died. Names applied. Not blank faces and nameless graves. This is supposed to be a nation that's great. By definition, the bloodshed is fitting, because that's just the way it's always been. Say, bun fire to the Bati men, and there you go dancing. Enslave the African, eradicate the Native American, put the Japanese in internment camps, and rape and murder your own women. Be the greatest country on the planet. Blood-soaked courthouse steps swab the granite. We take for granted the freedom so many have died for. First world lives denied more, and we let it ride. Paydays make the pain subside. Greenbacks make this genocide look like suicide. After all, they did this to themselves, right? 49 names for 50 states. 49 for 50. 49 names for 50 states. Each one should claim a piece of that pie today and have a toast to the good life. Right? Keep applauding the BS. Join the Tea Party and set a table for thousands. You will never be fed like Jesus did the multitudes, but you'll have the bread to kill a million people who aren't slaves like you. You are right. You are the chosen few who will go to your grave in Jesus' name, but who never knew the true meaning of what would Jesus do. Be fully present. Take a bow. Exist in your facade. The greatest trick the devil ever played was not convincing you he didn't exist. It was convincing you that he was God.
Love the poet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Love the poet. That's knows right. how to bring us to a conclusion. Right. Thank you, sister. Carlton Smith, Brianna Jenkins, Michelle, good to have you all here in the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a very short 10-second break and come back with Baltimore City Paper. Don't go away.